irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
Listening to LA Talk Radio. Very good. This is Jim Christina, your host, and I'm looking at my buddies, Bobby Jean Bell from Albuquerque, New Mexico, the quirky co-host, and of course, Richard Polinelli in Fruita, Colorado. Hey, guys.
Hello.
We got a frog.
I just haven't talked much today.
We have a frog on the radio today.
Nice background you got on your camera there.
Yes, this is from the location that was the inspiration for Rum Runner's Rest.
Hey. Oh, well, isn't that sneaky?
Oh, we have somebody down the corner going, yeah.
So if the listeners want to see it, we do a video replay. It'll be up tomorrow, and you'll have to track it down and you'll see what Bobby Jean has behind her.
And we will actually post that address on the on our webpage, on our Facebook page, along mm-hmm. with the web address for the podcast, which also will be available tomorrow.
Yeah.
But right now, you're listening to live radio, so anything goes. And we're getting snow, so hey.
Are you?
Oh my. Not any further ado. Richard and I have a little company called Tuscany Bay Books, and it's a little boutique publisher. And we hide out in Fruita, Colorado, and Star, Idaho, and we try to stay out of the public eye as much as we possibly can. We also have a publicist that works with us monthly. His name is Mickey Mickelson. He belongs to Creative Edge Publicity. And twice a month, we have one of his authors on the air. Well, tonight is one of those authors. And I'm gonna let her introduce mostly her own biography because I didn't print hers out. And I'm going to let her lie directly to the world. If you would welcome, please, a great writer's block welcome to Ms. Melissa Yee, or Dr. Melissa Yee. And she's an emergency room physician. And she's here with us and her new book, which is called White Lightning. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for having
me. Oh, and you get to have a whole bunch of people listen to you tonight. So, hey.
Oh, just only 600,000. Yeah, that's pretty normal.
Yeah, you know, what's 100 grand bunch of friends? You know what I mean? Exactly. Tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, you know, you don't have to go into detail, but, you know, a little bit about yourself. And then we want to know about your take and a little bit about White Lightning, because it's a very interesting read. I will say, before you get started, White Lightning is so full of disclaimers and so full of stuff that you can give stories away that we're going to have to really be careful about what we say, because we don't like spoiler alerts on this show. So, but other than that, take it away, Melissa. Tell us about Melissa.
I'll try not to spoil my own book, because that would be right off. But I'll say that you're right. I am an emergency physician. I work in Canada. I'm from Ottawa originally, and still live out and away to my high school sweetheart. And we have two kids and two dogs. So it's a busy life. But I really love writing. You know, like if I'd had the guts, I would have jumped right into writing. I wanted to do that since I was five. But I was like, man, I don't want to starve to death. I really want to have something to back me up and make sure I have a roof over my head. And I didn't want to rely on somebody else. I wanted to be able to feed myself and any kids that I had. So I was like, you know what? I'll just become a doctor and a writer and the medicine will give me stories to write about. So it's a two.
Okay. Yeah, that works. You've taken the don't give up your day job to the quintessential epitome of don't give up your day job.
Maybe I do also believe in financial independence and retire early, like the FIRE movement. So I have somewhat given up my day job, but obviously, with the pandemic and everything, it's just everybody has to be head down and do whatever you can. So
for sure. For sure. Well, your new book is White Lightning. Now, how many books have you written? I did not count them.
This is the ninth book in the Hope C Medical Crime Series, which is where the Dr. Hope C is a resident doctor, which means she has her MD, but she's rotating to different specialties every month, pretty much.
Right.
It used to be called internship. I think in the US it might still be called that, but in Canada it's part of your residency now. And every time she just sees murder and she has to solve it. So it's pretty exciting. But on this one, she actually gets to go on vacation. So her boyfriend, John Tucker, is like, let's get away. It's going to be so fun. As Bobby Jean mentioned, it's at this place called the Rum Runners Rest, which was an inn that was built during Prohibition because there was such money from the United States starting in 1920 when you had your national prohibition. And it's only about a mile or two away from Detroit. So they would just cross the river and bring all the good stuff. So they were getting rich on it. And there are still some buildings left from that era. And I ended up visiting one and reading about one, which was called La Maison de Bootlegger in Quebec. And I was like, you know what? We really, this is so interesting. And actually, full disclosure, one of my colleagues, Dr. Natalie Gamache, who's a gynecologist in Vancouver, said, I could make a gin for Hope. I could make a custom gin for her. She's an artisan distiller. And I was like, you know what? I don't really drink. I'm going to have to research alcohol. So I started looking up alcohol and death, alcohol and murder. And when you go back, there's a great white article talks about how, in the 1800s, 1700s in England, it was called the Mother's Ruin because so many people were addicted to gin and the government was making money on it. Like they used to like brandy from France, but they were at war with France. So it became unpatriotic to drink the brandy.
Sure.
And they were they wanted to have homegrown stuff and they wanted to tax it and make money there. So they were doing all those things, but then the problem was that the people were addicted, just like people are addicted now. And the government wouldn't do anything about it until there was a case where a woman killed her 2-year-old so she could sell his clothes for gin money. And after that, they were like, oh, we're going to have to do something about it. And then they started passing laws outlawing it. But it took to that extent.
Right. Well, gin was the cheapest drinking one for the longest time. And they used to call them gin sots.
Gin sots?
Sots, S-O-T, sot. They call them gin sots, yeah. But now they have, as you mentioned, Diamond Gin, which is always kept behind lock and key. Of course, we have Hendrix, which is a good Boodles, Bombay, both regular and sapphire. My personal preference. Hey guys, what did you think about Melissa's book?
Richard, you go.
Well, yeah, it was interesting how you started bringing in three different elements as far as we had three mysteries going on. What was going on with Edwin? What was going on with the hotel room? The girl in the hotel room with the guy. And then we had the mayors who were, you gave us little droplets of what each line was doing at a really good pace. We never forgot about them. And then when they show back up, we were so, we're kind of seeing where this is going. So it wasn't too jarring. And that's hard to do. That's hard to juggle that. And I really like that aspect of this book. So my question would be, what made you decide to do it that way as far as, having those three different lines converging on the one point?
It's interesting. I guess one of the things was for the pandemic, I didn't feel like writing a really gory mystery. I felt like life is too tough right now. Let's not go there. And I was like, what could I do but still have a body? And I was like, well, a skeleton is pretty innocent. You know, just bones, you know, you don't have to deal with. And I was like, you don't have to have a code, you know, because often Hope is trying to save John who died. And this way she doesn't have to do that. And, you know, there'd be a historical element, which is actually nerve-wracking for me since I don't usually write history. And history buffs can be quite picky about your work, so you don't want to get anything wrong, right? You have to spend a lot of time researching it. And so I started looking up people who are, like, when you find bones. And it's quite common to find them in walls mm-hmm. and in chimneys. But when you look up chimneys and bones, what comes up is that there's a lot of chimney sweeps who died. Because after the Great Fire in London, they tried to be more safe, and that was by cleaning the chimneys. But unfortunately, that just meant taking mostly orphans, but also sometimes people would sell their children
right.
because they couldn't afford to take care of them. And then, like, you know, you could have 4 and 6-year-olds scrambling up or down these hot chimneys trying to clean them.
Right.
So
I'll never be able to watch Mary Poppins again.
I know, but it makes you realize what a...
You totally just...
Oh, that's right. Dick Van Dyke was the chimney sweep.
Yeah.
I picked me bristles with pride. Yes, I do. A broom for the shaft and a brush for the flue.
Oh, it was a fascinating read. Just as Richard said, are there only 3 mysteries? I was feeling like maybe there were 4 or 5.
Oh, that's just a bunch.
And I know that I had to kind of go back. I read it and finished it in one day. I read it on Monday. And then today, Melissa, I had to go back because I don't take notes when I read. I'm just a reader. I just read. I don't read reviews. I don't go to a website. I don't do anything. I just sit down with the book. And I wanted to remember, of course, and the easiest thing for me is kind of create a cast of characters, because just a character, then things will come back to me. And as I was rereading today, I'm like, oh, there's a clue. Oh, there's a clue. And a lot of these clues were so well written that they're really hidden, I think, when you are reading through for a first time. And I kind of, as a reader, I kept saying, okay, how is this going to connect to this? Okay, I know there's going to be a way. That the prologue we're talking about, the chimney sweep prologue, is somehow, we're on 2 different continents. How is she going to weave that together? So it was a delightful read, and complex enough to, with interesting characters, engaging characters, lots of twists and turns, and also a mystery that uses a lot of what's going on today. There was texting. There was things that we take as commonplace, but I don't really find them so much in the literature that we read. And this had a lot of that. But also, listen, if you're listening, read it.
I found it interesting that you managed to put a lot of characters in, and there are certainly a lot of characters in this book. I mean, it's chock full, but you managed to keep them segregated. And I never really had to wonder who was who. You know, it was pretty easy to keep them separate. And like, we've read books where they put a lot of characters in, and like we've all said before, is that, man, we had to flip back, you know, 20 pages to figure out who this guy was and who this guy is, and, you know, keep going back and forth. But you managed to keep them fairly separated, which is really, really, really nice. And I really like Hope. Hope is like a really great chick. Yeah. She is a really great chick.
Yeah.
She truly is.
If you use that line, Hope is a really great chick.
Well, use that on the cover of your next book. Writer's Block says Hope's a great chick. I like them all, actually.
Yes, yes.
Some with foibles, some without. I mean, you know, she does a really good rounding of characters. And I'm going to talk around you now, Melissa. And she really, when she puts them into a scene, she just doesn't put them there. There's a purpose for each character being where they are when they're there, which I really, really, really like a lot. There's a lot of that's missing from some of the stuff we read, which is why we have to keep flipping back and forth, you know. But you have so many spoiler alerts in this book, it's really hard to talk about it without giving something away, you know.
Well, I can talk without giving out away.
You can. That's your prerogative.
Because I wanted to touch on, like, I did listen to your interview last week with Jen Lieberman, mm-hmm. and you talked about writing plays and screenplays, and her, because her was a stage piece before it mm-hmm. became a book, right. And that's opposite what we usually see and have done. And actually, I was going to say, that happened for White Lightning as well. So I took a playwriting course at George Brown College, and we could only do a 10-page scene, which is quite short. And that's actually where Edwin started. I could just hear his voice and him talking. He doesn't even get to say very much, but of course, him and the orphanage director, Mrs. Albury, and the man who takes him away, all those things were in my head. And so I was able to write it out, and then I brought it into the book. So that was pretty cool. And then the other thing was that it actually got in the Winnipeg Fringe Festival. They had a digital Fringe Festival last year because of COVID. And so I took Lego and I made a stop action piece with with just Edwin. And it was very amusing to me, because to have the cuteness of the Lego and then these very scary things happening.
Gotcha. Hey, we're going to take a real quick show away. Stay with us, pretty own Writer's Block, and we'll be right back with you after this brief word from LA Talk Radio.
If you have never listened to LA Talk Radio, then you need to treat yourself to one of the best online live radio stations around. If you have listened to talk radio and, let's be honest, found yourself saying, I can do that better, well then, LA Talk Radio wants you. See, we have 50-minute slots available all day, Saturdays and Sundays included, and we're looking to fill those slots with high-quality broadcasts from talk hosts that are in the know. If you think you have what it takes, go to www.latalkradio.com and click the link that says Become a Host. Then just follow the simple instructions. Before you know it, you'll be joining the legion of radio folks that got their start right here at LA Talk Radio. That's www.latalkradio.com. You have something to say, now let's hear it.
And we are back, and Richard is popping in and out like Mary Poppins.
Apparently.
And if you want to call and talk to Melissa Yee, she is a bit, nice hat. Hey, she brought her helmet. You can call and talk to Melissa. We're right here in the studio. The number is 323-203-0815. And again, that number is 323-203-0815. Okay. Who has something coming up for Melissa? Otherwise, I have another question.
I think Bobby had brought up a question. It's one we can do without doing spoiler alerts. Is the character Jazz. Where did Jazz come from? And is it based on the movie that we're thinking solely, or is there another book it's connected to? So I think that was Bobby's question.
I'm just gonna set the background for list. So,
right.
Because we have to have maximal things going on at once. There's also a con, like Comic Con, but mm-hmm. it's called Rogue Con. So everybody dresses up like a fictional villain, and it's fictional because we don't want Hitler or anybody to come like that. It just has to be, you dress up whoever you want. And in this case, they go and there's this most fantastic costume. So everybody's cool. They're creepy, like Children of the Corn. You know, they have the villain from Matilda, like Stephen King stuff is there. Like they're walking, the Darth Vader music is playing. Like it's a lot of fun, you know, and, you know, they're dancing and doing all this stuff. But then everything stops for this one woman who's being carried in on, it might be called a litter, you know, when you have four people who carry in, and, you know, they're playing some fantastic music, and then she comes down and she's wearing a costume from Alien. You know, she's the alien queen. And to be honest, I'm not sure exactly where she came from. But I knew that I just wanted this extremely strong woman.
Mm-hmm.
And, she didn't come from another book, but there was an alternate ending that was with her that I might still spin out for a short story. Yeah, because she's a very interesting, like, she's, like, the most sexy woman alive. Like, Hope is like, I never played for that team, but now I could. and everyone's just kind of sitting there slack-jawed because they can't believe it. And she doesn't always come to the cons. She only shows up like maybe once every 3 to 4 years. So it's a big event when she arrives.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
I liked your reference to White Lightning.
Uh-huh.
I really did. Because the explanation of white lightning, I used to go to North Carolina a lot. And a friend of mine down there, when I called on him, he was a customer. And he always had a quart of white lightning for me when I got there. And it was real white lightning. It was pink. Now, they have moonshine all over the place. But the real stuff has a pink hue to it. Because it's the way you know what I mean?
They distill it
at night. There's certain liquors that they only will do at nighttime. And the rest of the revenuers don't care. They just cook their booze whenever they want to. But the real aficionados cook their white lightning only at night. And
I have so many questions. Okay, how did it taste?
I'm sorry, it tastes really good.
Okay.
Oh, it burns going down, let me tell you.
Okay. So is it like
after the first slug, your throat's dumb and you don't care.
So is it like drinking a Bearcat?
Possibly, but a little worse. Actually, it's like drinking Everclear straight.
Oh, I don't know that.
Well, Everclear is a like 190 proof alcohol. To be honest with you, Melissa, we used to sit and drink the quart you get really drunk. Pretty fast.
Okay. Because you know what? I actually took me a second because there were a few different meanings of white lightning in the book. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I wasn't sure, but you mean the drink. And in fact, they're not drinking. Well, okay. So
you're drinking pure distilled alcohol.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mixed with nothing. It's not to drink white lightning like you describe in your book.
Yeah. I'm a bit fascinated by the pink. I wonder where the pink comes from.
The herbs I think they put in it. It's just something that's special that the guys use. That's all that they put.
Okay. Isn't that great that the white lightning on the book also?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
It actually just was dumb luck, I think, but it worked out really well.
And I also really love your historical research, because you did very well. I loved history and I loved looking into old buildings, and I love to be around when they demolish and raise old buildings, because you never know what's going to be stuck in the walls. You never know. A lot of times they find shoes, and I found out they put shoes in there because that kept the evil spirits away. It kept the demons out. I never knew that. Some guy told me that once. I said, wow, that's interesting. But bodies in chimneys? They had a chimney gone there too, didn't they? Tore apart the chimney and found the body.
Yeah, well, I
guess. Mystery number one.
Yeah, if you stick around and buildings are getting torn down, Jim, maybe that'll happen to you. You know, you're like.
Yeah, for sure.
It's a body, you know.
Well, when you think about how many people are actually killed between Detroit and Windsor, in Prohibition, and where they stuffed the bodies, and they put them everywhere. 55-gallon drums used to be pretty popular, but you guys ready to get into a little process?
Yeah, I think, although, one thing I wanted to say is give it about 100 years and they're going to knock down a building, and then we're going to figure out where Jimmy Hoffa got off to.
Well, yeah. You Richard know. Kuklinski answered that question.
Maybe.
So Melissa's book is White Lightning. It's available on Amazon and all your online booksellers. And we'll get back to it in a little bit. It's a very, very, very fun read. It's a very interesting read. And it's a page burner. You will not want to start reading it once you start it. Great chick. Great chick. So, and I love it, the fact that Melissa's sitting here with the helmet on. No, with her hat.
With her hat.
With her
age for the proper time period.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
1920s.
Yeah, absolutely.
A flapper hat.
I have one question that is process related, and yet it's still about this book, because this is book 9 in the series, Melissa, and we haven't had the privilege of reading any of the others. Can you just tell us how many of our central characters are reappearing from other books in the series?
Question. Yeah, so there's Hope, who is the main doctor who solves the crime. And she has a love triangle. So the love triangle is John Tucker, one of your favorite characters,
yep,
who is also a physician and in her program. And they meet in Montreal because she's from Ontario. She's from the next province over. And he falls in love with her immediately, basically. and she's a bit more hesitant. Like, he's a goofy guy. Like, he's not who she figured she would end up with. Because she also, Jim's making a face. And then because she always loved the guy that she first fell in love with, Ryan Wu. Her grandmother set her up with him. And actually, you can read their meet story in Ellery Queen's mystery magazine, Flamingo Flamenco, that was published earlier in 2021. Because they met at the casinos, basically. But anyway, so those are the three mains that have showed up for pretty much all of the books.
Okay.
But Griffin is new. So Tori has a new... Oh, Tori's also in the first book. So she's like one of Hope's best friends.
Yeah.
And she has a boyfriend. And like she's a kind of a mysterious character. She doesn't say a lot. So then just in book nine, like, oh, she has a boyfriend. But one of the things that surprised me was, of what I enjoyed, was that whole character, is just a few words, but he makes them count. You know? So
that... Okay.
Yeah, and some of the doctors and all that stuff, but because in this one they're on holiday, you don't get to meet all of them, but you would see at least three of them. Oh, and sorry, her family. I love her parents and her little
brother. Her brother, Kevin.
Yeah.
Only nine, you know?
Yeah.
He knows computers. He's a smart guy in a lot of ways. So, and she obviously really loves her family, and they always show up and give her a hard time.
Okay. Yeah.
Before we get any further, let's go ahead and take our mid-show break. We'll get that out of the way, and then Richard's over here chomping. He's got a question he wants to ask. No? Okay, fine.
Yeah, I might.
right now, you're listening to LA Talk Radio, and it's our very own Writer's Block. We will be right back after this brief word from Dog Shit Tuscan.
And on a book that makes Rowlings look like Jack and Jill went up the hill, that makes Tolkien's look like a trip to the store, and finishes a series better than George R.R. Martin? But you don't know how to get your book into the hands of readers? Well, look, before you throw that manuscript in the trash and set Warp 10 for Get Me the Hell Out of Here, go to TuscanyBayBooks.com, click on the Submissions tab, tell us all about your book, and we'll get back in touch with you, and we'll help you get that thing formatted, edited, get a great book cover for it, get it out there so that people can read it, and let you know how to market it, too, so that you can do the most important thing, write your next book. That's TuscanyBayBooks.com. Go there today.
And we are back with our guest, Melissa Yee. And if you want 2-3-2-0-3-0-8-1-5. Okay, guys, let her rip.
Okay, see, now with all her costume changes, now I'm wishing I had grabbed a carrot at the beginning of the show and done the what's up, Doc thing. Because, I mean, I missed a golden opportunity tonight, and I'm not feeling very happy with myself. So. I guess I'm going to get into kind of a process thing. With you are a ER doctor. You kind of answered this before, but at what point do you kind of catch yourself if you're at work and you're working on something, maybe patient related, maybe not, maybe behind the scenes hospital, and you go, wow, this would be great if I did this, this, and this. I mean, do you find yourself doing that a lot now that you've been writing these books?
You mean, do I find myself distracted by writing when I'm at work?
No, not so much distracted, but you encounter something and it triggers a story idea.
Yeah, like, well, I mean, that does happen, but I also write nonfiction. So one of my most popular books actually is called The Most Unfeeling Doctor in the World and Other True Tales from the Emergency Room.
Okay.
And so usually if there's something from work, I might just write it straight up, like if it's that inspiring, you know, with details changed and et cetera. But sometimes I just let it, for fiction, I might just let it percolate. It takes me a longer time to grow. You know, it's got to go into that compost pile. So it all depends. But I do love anywhere I am, it doesn't matter if I'm at work or at home with my kids, like walking the dog. Like one of my friends said, you have these little antennas, and I just see them go up. You're just like, oh, it's a story idea. We were visiting South Africa together, and there was a group of people from. I was talking to a guy when I was recharging my computer, and afterwards, she told me that the students were like, "Why is Melissa talking to a stranger?" it just kind of blew their minds. And she was like, well, she's a writer. She just likes to talk to everybody. And like, to me, I was like, but why would you go to a different continent and not speak to the people there? Like, waste. So for me, that was like one of the best things, is always having the story antenna up and, you know, making sure you can gather as much as possible, because life is short. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And with an emergency room, I mean, you've got, there's crazy stuff that happens in an ER all the time. My wife's in healthcare. I've been around hospitals enough to know you never know what's coming through that door. So, I mean, you must have, I don't know if you have an endless supply of material to work with, but I mean, you've got to get, there's got to be a lot of things that you're kind of in the file and kind of letting brew a little bit.
It's true, especially because people may not have family doctors, so then they come in for regular care. So, you know, I try to reassure people, like, I only write about you if you're, like, really crazy or, you know, somehow really exciting. And that's only, like, less than 10% of people. Most people are pretty normal. So don't worry about it. I'm not here to, like, secrets.
Yeah.
But if anybody there is, you know, like, I would love to write about it because, you know, people are fascinating.
Yeah. I'm not going to write about you unless you walk in the door with your intestines dragging out behind you. Then you're a story. There's a story there somewhere. When do you like to write? When is your favorite time to write?
Well, so before I work, because, you know, like after work, like I think a lot of people, I just feel like dead. Right. So that means morning. And I'm not a huge fan of getting up early. You know, it's, you just got to tick it off on your to-do list. You don't want it dragging over your head. Like, it's like having homework that you never did.
Right.
So I try to get it done and move out. And my husband sometimes tells me, he's just like, you know, you're allowed to relax. You know, it's okay to not do anything. And I love the permission to do that sometimes. But most of the time, I just love to be super efficient and get it all done.
Yeah, well, I actually can see that. How many, do you have a word count that you like to accomplish daily?
Correct. Okay. So I like to do 1,000 words a day if I'm not working, and then 500 words a day if I am working. Because early on, like, I started working with Christine Catherine Rush and Dean Wesley Smith had a workshop. And the people there, I'm like, oh, yes, I wrote 500 words today. And they're like, 8,000 words. And I'm just, what? You know, like, at the time I was on intensive care, like I had to come back and do all my shit, and I was just like, there is no way I can compete with these guys. Like they are either full-time writers or, you know, that is their life priority. I cannot do both, so that's just what it's going to be. And for NaNoWriMo, where you try to write a novel in a month, you know, I do hit the 2,000 words a day or whatever, but most of the time I just try to keep it comfortable so I don't feel burned out. Because when I did regularly write 2,000 words a day, I didn't feel like I had the energy to, like, submit short stories or anything. I'd just be like done. Like, I just, again, noodle. So you gotta conserve your energy and live.
Is there a particular word count you like to keep your novels at for comfortable reading?
So it's funny, eh? So for my first Hope novel, it's like 100,000 words. But since then, I've gotten very concise. And I think part of it is just medicine, because, you know, I use a lot of abbreviations. I don't want to have a lot of extra time. It takes me time to chart, you know, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time chatting away. Mm-hmm. But so now it's more like 50 to 60K. And okay. I write a lot. Like, I probably write like more like 200,000 per book, but everything gets cut.
Well, sure. Yeah, Richard and I know the editing process very well. Although we don't cut a lot of words. Bobby?
Since you're a doctor, is there a disease that you would really like to find the cure for?
Oh, it's so great. You know, when I first, like, I remember in grade 9, like, one of the girls signing my book, she was like, I hope you find the cure for cancer, genius. And I was like, oh, I actually felt torn at the time because I knew I wanted to be a writer. And I was like, oh, but I know science. I should save people's lives. Like, anyway, so of course, cancer is one of the first things that comes to mind. Although cancer is a heterogeneous disease, like even within five different kinds of pancreatic cancer, for example. So that's why it's so hard to tackle everyone. But I have to say, we've made amazing strides in it. Like, I don't think people realize. You know, I was talking to one of my nurse friends, Carolyn Baker Sterling, and she was like, the chemotherapy we give now is nothing like what we gave 10 years ago. It's so much easier to tolerate, you know, and I find it so much more effective. You know, like when I was in medical school, melanoma was considered pretty much a death sentence, like, you know, after a few months. And now it's like you have immune targeted therapy and people are just like, yeah, stage four, no problem. Just make sure you have centers and you can live for years and years. My dad is doing that sort of thing. So that would be one of the ones that I would tackle, although heart disease is also a huge problem in North America. You know, I could just sit here and talk about diseases with you.
Well, it's the doctor thing, I think.
The other second question.
Oh, great question. Thank you. It's funny. I wrote one book like while listening to Great Big Sea and another one while listening to Chris Isaac over and over again, like one album over and over again. But I don't always. So sometimes like I have done like, you know, the cat, you know how you can have like cafe music, like cafe people talking and stuff like that. So I've done that. I have put right now. I don't know if you know this song, Meet Me at Our Spot by The Anxiety. It's a big one on TikTok. So I downloaded that song and I just played it on repeat. And my husband's like, oh, you're playing the Doobie Doobie Doo song again.
Like, Doobie Doobie Doo. That would be Frank Sinatra, would that not?
But yeah, like, I listen to lots of different stuff for fun. Once again, I don't... when my kids are doing online school and they're in the room with me, that was tough. Yeah. I didn't realize it consciously, but afterwards I was just like, of course you can't write when people are like talking in French around you. You just like, 'cause my kids go to French school. Like, I'm just like, what was I thinking?
Well, I mean, it's like being in a room with your children when they're locked in with you and you say you don't drink. How could you not drink?
I do have a number two tonight. And I just want to add too that she is making a gin called White Lightning. That is going to be her hope.
Oh, very cool.
Cool. Yes,
I wanted her to do the Hope Diamond gin. And she was like, I don't know how to distill diamonds. as I had mentioned to Jim. So the next best thing is White Lightning. So I'm going to give it a try. And not drinking, but dance and sing and do all sorts of stuff without it. So I don't need it. But my husband loves to drink, so, you know, it all works out.
At least one of you do.
Yeah, that's right.
We have the name of this program is The Writer's Block, and we always ask everybody this question. Have you ever had writer's block? If you did, how did you get out of it? And if you haven't, how have you avoided it?
Okay, so this is actually a big thing to me. Because I think when you first start out, like especially a lot of people are just like, oh, I love to write so much. And they just, you know, they just pour the words out. But life is going to hit you.
Right.
So Chris and Dean call them life roles. So the things just happen. So after a death in our family, I was trying to write and I was doing my best and I was, you know, at least writing emails and I would try and like write something. Like at the time I was writing 2,000 words a day, so I would just be writing and writing and just sort of twisting myself in knots about it. And then I talked to Chris and she was like, I'm surprised you're writing at all. And she basically said not to force yourself because then you would hate it. And I was like, oh, she's giving me permission not to write. Because up until then, because, you know, like I'm a competitive person. You know, I was with all these people who were like balls to the wall. You know, I just thought you had to write 24/7, basically, or else you weren't a real writer and you know, you should give it up. But then I, you know, after that, I realized like life will hit you no matter who you are. And you have to have compassion with yourself. And writing is not something that you should force and make it something ugly like a chore. So I backed off, you know, I read and I just kind of watched myself. And one of the things that I did was I noticed that I started thinking other ways. And I was like, yes, I want to make a cake and I'm going to bake prizes in it. Like, because I remember that when I was a kid. So, you know, you could put coins in it or you could like, so I put like, in her case, I put spices that I'd wrapped in wax paper. And I put what I call a dentist ring because it was like just a fake cheap ring that I got at the dentist's office. But as a kid, I thought it was a big treasure. That was hilarious, by the way, because she served it to one of the people who was working in her house, you know, like renovating her house. And so he ended up with a ring and he was so confused. just put it aside. But I was just like, you have to tell people there's stuff in the cake. Like, that's kind of an important thing not to leave out. And though, although I'm not an artistic person, I wouldn't say like visual arts. Like I, you know, someone sent me a letter and there was a tiger on the envelope. And I started drawing the tiger and stuff. And I'm just like, I'm just doing different things. I just stepping your toes in and just having fun again and not forcing yourself. So the other thing was, it felt horrible, like to have death in your life and then to have people telling you no and we don't want this and alas, it doesn't work for us and stuff. It's just like a very bad headspace. Like, and I think a lot of people are probably going through that right now. So just be gentle with yourself, you know, try and love yourself. And you're more than your writing. You don't have to produce. You just like your first job is to live your life, and your next thing would be, you know, somewhere in there is writing, but it's not your only thing in life.
Okay. Let's go ahead and get our last break out of the way, and we'll be right back with you with our guest, Melissa Yee. And you're listening to The Writer's Block. We'll be back with you right after this brief word from Creative Edge Publicity.
Okay. You've written a book. How are you going to get your name out there? Well, the folks at Creative Edge Publicity will. That's their job. They aren't going to sell your book. They don't want to sell your book, but they will take your brand from the ground up so you are known in your genre and within the writer's community. They'll do this by using relationships with contacts they've made in TV, in radio, podcast, and publishing to get your name and your brand recognized. So why are you waiting? Contact Creative Edge Publicity at www.creative-edge.services or email Mickey Mickelson at mickey.creativeedge@gmail.com. Creative Edge, it's your work and it's your brand. Why would you trust it to anyone else? Creative Edge Publicity.
And we are back with our guest, Melissa Yee. It is now 15 minutes to 7 Pacific time. And I have one more question for you, Melissa, and this may be the question. Are you a pantser or are you an outliner?
I just have to laugh because I'm probably a lot of your guests know what that is, but not everyone does. So, yes, I love to write by the seat of my pants. As yes. You might have figured out by the 200,000 you know, words going down to 50,000 words. But it's not very efficient. So I am trying to turn a bit into a planter where you do the plotting and...
Right, a plotter. Yeah.
I love just writing to discover and just being like, what the heck is going on? I think it's because in a lot of life, like, for example, in medicine, you follow a lot of algorithms, you know, like, I see this, I've diagnosed this, follow this, you know, this is the antibiotic you should use, et cetera, which is good for standardized care. You know, you don't want people just flying off and doing whatever they feel like. But doesn't leave a lot of room for creativity. So for writing, I love just basically going crazy and being like, what is going to happen here? I have no idea. Therefore, you have no idea. Like even for White Lightning, and you were saying, how can she bring in this Edwin from England and Hope in Windsor? Like, how are these things going to come together?
Right.
And the truth is, I had trouble figuring that out too. You know, but that's part of the joy of it and also when in my playwriting course, like she was just like, what are they doing at the rum? That doesn't make any sense, you know, but how do you tie it together? Gives me great pleasure.
Do you find that occasionally your characters dictate the where the story's going to go one way or another?
Yes. And that's another of my great pleasures. I'm just like the other, like just yesterday, one character did something else and I was just like, where did that come from? I'm going to have to look up that injury. Like, that's just crazy. But thank you. I'm going to run with it and just see where it goes.
Yeah, yeah. As Richard and I talk about this a lot, and we both do the same thing. We allow our characters to manifest where they're going to go. You know, and if it's a character you've written a series about, they know where they're going to go before you even know where they're going to go. So... I like that. And we had a writer on not too long ago. I don't remember who it was. I said, no, my characters never dictate. Do you remember that, Bobby? My
I
characters
do.
Never dictate.
We
and
were
it was like,
so
whoa,
surprised.
Excuse me.
She's like, they're my characters. They will do what I tell them to.
I tell
really.
Them.
Really? Like, wow. Okay. Yeah. That's how she writes, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It is what it is. Okay, in the couple of minutes we have left, if you want to tell our guests, our customer, our listeners, where they can find you on social media, whatever you want to, email, website, whatever you want to give them.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much. So my website is super long. So melissayuannes.com. I did shorten it to myi.ninja. So that's also a possibility. I am on Facebook. I try to use both names. So Melissa Yee Yuannes and Twitter at Dr_Sassy. And I am also on Instagram under Melissa Yuannes and TikTok at MYI Books. And I'm pretty much on every social media platform. So if you want me, like, just look me up. Okay. I am not active on all of them. And I should probably prune them. But anyway, I am everywhere.
I was like Chicken Man. He's everywhere.
Everywhere.
And we've been talking with Melissa Yee. She is the writer of a new book, a fantastic book that we all enjoyed. It's called White Lightning. It's available on Amazon. And it just came out in December, yeah?
Yeah, December 1st.
There you go. And it's available all online booksellers, Amazon, and wherever you find books are sold. Melissa, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a lot of fun having you on with us. Coming out after the show, great. Next week, we have a returning hero. A conquering hero is back with us. And, well, two of them. Russ Avison will be back with us again. He's back into his normal third Thursday time slot. But our guest next week is Bob Brill. And he, of course, those who don't know, Bob was a co-host on the Writer's Block for a year or two. And it's a great guy. He's written a lot of Western books, Lancer, the Hero of the West. And he's just, his brand new book, The Tattoo Murders, has just been published by Tuscany Bay. It became available and live on December 21st. If you like really, really, really good mysteries, contemporary mysteries, you will love this book. It's called The Tattoo Murders. You can find it everywhere online. You can get it in hardback or paperback. And it is available. And Bob will be with us to talk about this book next week. That being said, I guess we're pretty much done, guys. What do you think?
I think so. I think we have
on the route. Probably pretty much banged the hooch. Okay, so
off my boa now.
We love your boa. We love you. So just now sit there and be quiet for a minute. No, I'm only teasing you. For Bobby Jean Bell and of course Jim Bell, Richard Polinelli, myself, of course the bookie, without whom the show would not be possible. Russ Avison, Mr. Sam Hassan from LA Talk Radio. And for all of us, to all of you, we are out of here.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.